Just what are the factors that cause one person to say yes to another person, and which techniques are used to bring about such compliance? Why is it that a request stated in a certain way will be rejected, while a request that asks for the same favor in a slightly different fashion will be successful? These are the questions asked and answered in Robert Cialdini's book, Influence. Spend the next 10 minutes with us to learn the secrets of the persuaders, and if necessary, how to avoid their spell. The Read It For Me Idea Code is a shorthand system to help you memorize the core concepts so you can quickly apply them in any situation. The Read It For Me Idea Code for Influence is CRTLCCSPFS. C, contrast. R, reciprocation. TL, toplining. C, consistency. C, compliance. SP, social proof. F, for flattery. And finally, S for scarcity. Lesson number one, contrast. Today's work moves at a fast pace. We need to absorb, process, and act on information constantly. When we need to make a decision, we often resort to using shortcuts in the decision-making process. One such shortcut is the contrast principle. The contrast principle affects the way we see the difference between two things that are presented one after another. Simply put, if the second item is fairly different from the first, we tend to see it as more different than it actually is. This weapon of influence, as Cialdini calls them, does not go unexploited, and its greatest advantage is not only that it works, but also that it is virtually undetectable. Have you ever been shopping for clothes, selected a fairly expensive suit or dress, and then been persuaded to accessorize with a shirt, shoes, or bag? I have, at least with the suit, shirt, and the shoes. That's the contrast principle in action. It is much more profitable for the salesperson to present the expensive item first, not only because to fail to do so will lose the influence of the contrast principle. To fail to do so will also cause the principle to work actively against them. If the first thing we buy is comparably cheap, the more expensive item seems, well, more expensive. Do you want fries with that? Lesson number two, reciprocation. The second of Cialdini's weapons of influence is the rule of reciprocation. The rule says that we should try to repay, in kind, what another person has provided us. A large number, if not all of us, have been taught to live up to this rule and know about the social sanctions and derision applied to anyone who violates it, moochers, freeloaders, spongers, and so on. Because there is a general distaste for those who take and make no effort to give in return, we often go to great lengths to avoid being considered one of their number. Cialdini suggests, one of the reasons reciprocation can be used so effectively as a device for gaining another's compliance is its power. The rule possesses awesome strength, often producing a yes response to a request that, except for existing feeling of indebtedness, would have surely been refused. As a marketing technique, the free sample engages the reciprocity rule. The promoter who gives free samples can release the natural indebting force inherent in a gift, while innocently appearing to have only the intention to inform. A person can trigger a feeling of indebtedness by doing an uninvited favor. The rule only states that we should provide to others the kind of actions that they have provided for us. It does not require us to have asked for what we have received in order to feel obligated to repay. Most of us find it highly disagreeable to be in a state of obligation. It weighs heavily on us and demands to be removed. Consequently, we may be willing to agree to perform a larger favor than we received, merely to relieve ourselves of the psychological burden of debt. There's no such thing as a free lunch. Lesson number three, toplining. Cialdini's third weapon of influence is the toplining technique. This is easy to state. First, make a larger request of me, one that I will most likely turn down. Then, after I've refused, make the smaller request that you were really interested in all along. Most likely, I'll oblige. Here's a commercial example. You go to buy a new laptop. The sales assistant, Bob, invariably shows you the deluxe model first. If you buy, great for Bob. He's just made a bigger margin. However, you're likely to decline. After all, you don't need the bells and whistles. Bob counters with a reasonably priced model. You're hooked, and you buy. Bob wins again. After all, a sale is a sale. This technique happens all the time in retail. Tomorrow, count the rejection and retreat offers you encounter. I expect there are more than a handful. Lesson number four, consistency. Cialdini tells us something fascinating about people at the racetrack. Just after placing a bet, they are much more confident of their horse's chances of winning than they are immediately before laying down that bet. Of course, nothing about the horse's chances actually shifts. It's the same horse on the same track in the same field. But in the minds of those bettors, its prospects improve significantly once that ticket is purchased. This is Cialdini's fourth weapon of influence, the force of consistency. Quite simply, once we've made a choice or taken a stand, we encounter pressures to behave consistently with that commitment. We fool ourselves to keep our thoughts and beliefs consistent with what we've already decided. But because it's in our best interest to be consistent, such consistency can also be exploited by those who would prefer that we don't think too much in response to their requests for our compliance. Take toy manufacturers wanting to increase sales in January or February. They start prior to Christmas with attractive TV ads for certain special toys. The kids, naturally, want what they see and extract Christmas promises for those items from their parents. The manufacturers undersupply the stores with the toys they've gotten the parents to promise. Most are forced to make a substitute of other toys of equal value. The toy manufacturers, of course, make a point of supplying the stores with plenty of these substitutes. Then, after Christmas, the companies start running the ads again for the other special toys which are now in great supply. And as a parent, we need to be consistent to our promise, and hey, presto, double toys, double expense. Lesson number 5, compliance. How are you doing today? The caller's intent seems to be friendly and caring, but it has a cutting edge. There's a sales pitch approaching. The theory behind this tactic is that other people who've just asserted that they are doing fine, even as a routine part of a sociable exchange, will consequently find it awkward to appear stingy in the context of their own admittedly favored circumstances. You've fallen into this compliance trap before. Cialdini tells us to be very careful about agreeing to trivial requests. Such agreements not only increase our compliance with similar, larger requests, it can also make us more willing to perform a variety of larger favors that are only remotely connected to the little one we did earlier. Whenever you take a stand that is visible to others, you are driven to maintain that stand to look like a consistent person. Commitments are most effective when they are active, public, and effortful. So, how you doing? Lesson number 6, social proof. Like Seinfeld? Ever join in the laughter while on your own? To discover why canned laughter is so effective, we first need to understand the nature of yet another of Cialdini's weapons of influence, the principle of social proof. The principle applies to the way that we decide what constitutes correct behavior. We view a behavior as more correct in a given situation to the extent that we see others performing it. Advertisers love to inform us when a product is the fastest growing or largest selling, because they don't have to convince us directly that the product is good. They only need to say that many others think so, which seems to be proof enough for us. In general, when we're unsure of ourselves, when the situation is unclear or ambiguous, when uncertainty reigns, we are most likely to look to and accept the actions of others as correct in a phenomenon called pluralistic ignorance. We will use the actions of others to decide on proper behavior for ourselves, especially when we view those others as similar to ourselves. We like people who are similar to us. This fact seems to hold true whether the similarity is an area of opinions, personality traits, background, or lifestyle. Consequently, those who wish to be liked in order to increase our compliance can accomplish that purpose by appearing similar to us in any wide variety of ways. Which leads nicely into the next lesson. Lesson number 7, flattery. An important fact about human nature. We are phenomenal suckers for flattery. Although there are limits to our gullibility, especially when we can be sure that the flatterer is trying to manipulate us, we tend, as a rule, to believe praise and to like those who provide it, often when it's clearly false. Flattery, Cialdini's next weapon of influence. This is actually called the liking principle, where we are much more likely to agree to the requests of people that we like. A host of examples is possible. Most are familiar, like the new car salesman who takes our side and does battle with his boss to secure us a good deal. In other examples, we will like a person or a product simply because it's associated with something else that we already like. For instance, in Olympiad years, we are told precisely which is the official hairspray and facial tissue of our Olympic teams. The linking of celebrities to products is another way advertisers cash in on the association principle. Professional athletes are paid to connect themselves to things that can be directly relevant to their roles. sports shoes, tennis rackets, golf balls, or wholly irrelevant, soft drinks, popcorn poppers, and even aftershave. Look at your man, now back at me, now back at your man, now back at me. Lesson number 8, scarcity. The scarcity principle. Opportunities seem more valuable to us when their availability is limited. Well, in conversation, we're routinely interrupted to answer the ring of our cell phone, and we answer rather than continue talking. In such a situation, the caller has a compelling feature that our face-to-face partner does not: potential unavailability. If we don't take the call, we might miss it and the information it carries for good. Cialdini suggests people seem to be more motivated by the thought of losing something than by the thought of gaining something of equal value. For instance, homeowners told how much money they could lose from inadequate insulation are much more likely to insulate their homes than those told how much money they could save. As a rule, if it's rare or becoming rare, it's more valuable. A variant of this deadline tactic, much more favored by some face-to-face high-pressure sellers, carries the purest form of decision deadline: right now. Customers are often told that unless they make an immediate decision to buy, they will have to purchase the item at a higher price or they'll be unable to purchase it at all. Incidentally, scarcity is also a primary cause of political turmoil and violence. Revolutionaries are more likely to be those who have been given at least some taste of a better life. When the economic and social improvements they have experienced and come to expect suddenly become less available, they desire them more than ever and often rise up violently to secure them. When it comes to freedoms, it is more dangerous to have given for a while than never to have given at all. So remember, once delivered, you can't take it away. And there you have it, everything you need to get started being a master of influence, using Cialdini's Weapons of Influence.